Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. So this morning, I'm going to talk a little bit about poverty and Zen. So we know the quote, most of us know the quote from Jesus. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Most of us know that, at least. Well, that's not exactly the Zen attitude. It's not exactly the Zen attitude. In my own life, which is getting longer, as it is for all of us, I have been rich and poor and rich and in between at different junctures in my life, and I could spend some time on that, but that's not necessary, I don't think. And I don't think that the times that I've had money have been, I don't think my practice has necessarily been more open, more wholehearted. The times that I didn't have money than when I did. Really, in Zen, our focus, and I think I said this in the title, and I've said this for years, our focus is on returning to zero, which is a different kind of poverty, isn't it? Returning to zero. So what's going on in the outside world is we have to pay attention to. We have to take care of it. But that's not what we talk about when we talk about poverty in Zen. As much as possible, Zen is about living from zero. Living from zero. So, when I was a young man and I was going for a walk on Bush Street in San Francisco, maybe must have been toward the end of the day, I passed my teacher. I saw him in the fog. Always in the fog in San Francisco. Beautiful, sunny San Francisco. I'll just say that because people think in Minnesota, but San Francisco has a wonderful climate. Mark Twain said the coldest summer he ever spent, the coldest winter he ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. So, walking through the fog, I see my teacher coming toward me on the sidewalk, and he has a bag. And I didn't have any. Well, I was a little bit. Well, I was happy to see him, but also I felt a little awkward running into him. I felt awkward because he's my teacher, and you know, I don't know why. I just felt awkward. So I didn't. I ran into him, and he saw me, and he beamed, and he said, "Look what I've got." And he opened up his bag. And in the bag, I looked in the bag, and I looked in it with, you know, with his eyes, with the "look what I've got" eyes, which are not my usual eyes. And I looked in, and then I saw red tomatoes and yellow squash and spinach and strawberries, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. That's what we call returning to zero. Returning to zero. And then he said, "Only 2 days old, almost fresh." And then I was at 32,000. I went from zero to 32 in a moment. Almost 2 days old. Almost. Then I looked into them and they looked yucky. They looked yucky. And I didn't know if, I suppose this was, I thought this must be some Zen teaching, but I was kind of confused. Well, later I learned about his life. I learned that he was in Japan. He was lucky, especially after World War II, if he could get 2-day-old vegetables. He was really lucky. He would have to go for days, for weeks, with no vegetables at all. And he'd been dumpster diving just a a block from our Zen center with delight. But I was glad he didn't invite me over to dinner that night. Because I lost my zero pretty quick. We lose our zero pretty quick. We go into thinking and comparing and, oh, geez, this is weird. He's eating that food. But actually, I'm sure he cooked it up in a good soup. I mean, cooked it up in a good soup. And it looked beautiful to me till he told me what was in there. Then all of a sudden, it looked yucky, right? That's the human mind. When it's caught on 32 or 44, or moving from 66 to 88, instead of just returning to zero. So, in the Dharma talk that I gave last Wednesday, I talked about my friend Linda and Andy. And Andy has gotten Parkinson's. He got it a while ago. And he's getting more and more and more debilitated to the point that his language skills are almost not there. They're almost gone. And, you know, in Parkinson's, maybe you don't know. I hope you never have to know. But in Parkinson's, your physical coordination goes, too. And his physical coordination is really going. So he wanted me to come to lunch, and I was happy to be there. But his wife, Linda, had to spend the whole time there feeding him, really. And he would take some spoonfuls, and then he'd kind of miss his mouth a little bit. So she helped him. She didn't feed him the whole time. And but she was very very calm. Apparently, while she was doing it, she seemed very calm. And she still, I've known them for a long time, and I knew them when there was no Parkinson's. And I just saw the care and the affection that she did with him. And I thought, boy, that is really pretty wonderful. That she can do that, that she's able to be there and with him. And as I get older, I'm thinking a lot about that, about how people we have peer relationships with, whether they be partners or friends, that sometimes when someone gets ill, that relationship really changes. And only if you return to zero can you be there with them in a different way. So my friend Linda said to me afterwards, or at the end, she said, "And I'm not having time to practice. I'm not having time to practice because I just need to be with him. He just needs me." And that's interesting that she said, "I'm not having time to practice," because to me, she seemed to be, whatever practice is, she seemed to be there with him, feeding him, wiping the drool off his mouth, calling him sweetie, just like he was her lover. Well, of course, he has been her lover. He has been. But he's not able to do that anymore. So there she was. And she was saying this to me, you know, because I'm the Buddhist teacher, right? I'm the Zen teacher, so I'm I'm not able to practice. And I think, my goodness, if only I could do that. If only I could just be there at zero the way she is. Right? Just at zero. Zero is openness. Zero allows all the numbers. It's the decimal point for all the numbers, isn't it? All the numbers can pass through zero. All the numbers are supported on zero, get their life from zero. If we remember that, then we can enjoy them all, can't we? We can enjoy them all. So then she looked at me kind of beseechingly, as if I were the teacher. Well, I am just her friend, but you know, we carry these labels around, right? And I said, well, this is what you're doing right here. Isn't this practice? She said, yes, but I have no alone time. And I said, you have no alone time? She said, well, a woman comes in the morning, and I have about a half an hour to eat breakfast. And I said, okay, a half an hour of Zazen breakfast. How about that? How about that? A half hour of just being with your food, just taking care of it, just noticing the colors, just taking the bites with nothing else. And I didn't have to go into any details with her because she's a Zen student, right? About no radio, about no TV, about no reading, you know, because how can you really return to zero if you're all split off? Even when you're not split off, you're always splitting inside. So you need, if you want to return to zero, to reduce your bombardment of stimuli. Really, you need to reduce that, or it's not possible. But I didn't have to tell her that, because she knows that. She's a Zen student, right? She knows that. But we know it, and yet we forget. We don't forget intellectually. We forget behaviorally and emotionally. Because, well, I don't know why. We just do. I do too. So, we're in the middle of our Zen practice period, as I said, which goes on for 8 weeks, and I think we finished the fifth week. And people report every once a week on how they're doing with their practice, how they're doing. And, of course, some people give true confessions, and some don't. Some are. And for some it's going great, but some people are falling down on honoring their commitments. They're doing so much sitting a day, so much, they're falling down, and they're not feeling good about it. But that's life. That's life. We always fall down. We make an aspiration and we fall down. And we make an aspiration, we fall down. That's life, isn't it? Anyway, Zen practice isn't about more. Oh, I should do more Zazen. Well, okay, more, less. We're returning to zero. We always think we should do more so we can become better or deeper or more profound or more enlightened. More. We're the more culture, aren't we? How about less? How about doing less and less and less? How about really returning to zero? Really returning to zero, just as you are. Less and less and less and less and less. Doesn't mean being lazy. It has nothing to do with being lazy. Not vegging out. Just allowing monkey mind the space to calm down. So I've been talking in my last couple talks also about five dimensions of heart mind, shin, Sino-Japanese, heart mind, five dimensions. So I'll talk about them again a little bit today. So the five dimensions of heart-mind are physical dimension, mental dimension, emotional mood dimension, openness dimension, and fullness emptiness dimension. So returning to zero is unclogging the arteries. They're all clogged up, but clog up our wonderful, beautiful heart mind. We clog them off with all this gunk, don't we? With all these worries, with all these problems, with all this rumination, with all this expectation, with all this indignation, right? We clog them up. We clog up these arteries. But the heart mind is beating. It's beating. It's waiting for us to return to zero. It's waiting for us just to be there and allow the arteries to unclog so we can enjoy all five dimensions. So, the first three dimensions, the physical, bare awareness of the physical. Bare awareness of the physical. Zen practice is so much about that. Being in touch with our bodies, with what's going on, not just when we're sitting, but wherever we are, coming back, using our body as an anchor to come back. Even if we've got pain in the knee, using the pain in the knee as an anchor to come back and just feel the sensations. The mental, bare awareness. And by bare awareness, we mean no critic. The critic comes in, but the more bare your awareness is, the less the critic will dominate. The more bare. That's poverty of Zen. It's real poverty. Not the kind of poverty that has to do with money. Do you understand? Bare awareness of the physical. Bare awareness of that monkey. That monkey mind, right? How it just runs from one tree to another. We go to the Caribbean every winter. We hate, you know, if you live in a place where there are monkeys, you hate monkeys. If you don't live in a place where there are monkeys, you love monkeys. So we hate monkeys just like you hate your monkey mind when we go to the Caribbean. One monkey runs from a mango tree to a papaya tree to a banana tree to an apple tree, although of course there aren't any apples. Monkey will find one and samples each fruit and chucks it, moves on, samples each fruit and chucks it. There are no fruit left. And that's what we say monkey mind, isn't it, in Zen? Isn't that why we call it that? Because it does that? Not too ecological, is it? Well, maybe it is ecological. All that fruit goes down on the ground and makes better compost. Sure, it is ecological. But how frenetic it is for us as human beings. How frenetic. So, bare awareness of the physical, bare awareness of the mental, bare awareness of the underlying emotion or mood. Usually there is an underlying emotion, an underlying mood. And I don't know what your mood. Did I say this last time? Well, I'll say it again. Doesn't matter. I don't know what your mood was like when you got up this morning and you looked out and you saw gray. Or maybe you thought of Zen Center. And your thoughts are so dictated by your mood, aren't they? So dictated. The sun comes out. Your mood improves, and all of a sudden your thoughts improve. All of a sudden, lots of positive mental stuff coming in. So the interplay between the mood and the mental and the thoughts is so subtle and so delicate. And yet, it's not hard to just see it with bare attention. It's not hard if we do it. Not hard. Bare attention, bare awareness of Zazen, which doesn't mean you need to even do the Zazen posture. You can do any posture. But you need to be in a place that's kind of still to do this. Well, you can do it in a noisy place, but you're pretty advanced then. You're more advanced than I am, and then I should become your student. And I will. I gladly will. No problem. No problem. So the important things for opening up to heart mind, for returning to zero, and practicing the bare awareness wherever we are, whether we're walking or sitting or lying down, is constancy, constancy. That means we continue to do it. We continue to do it. We bring ourselves back. When we get discouraged, we bring ourselves back. And we know this is true for musical instruments, for foreign languages, for artistic endeavors. Why would it not be true for Zen? Why? How could it be any different for Zen? Constancy. Constancy. Constancy without comparing. That's the other component. Without comparing. Without comparing. The reason we become inconstant is because we feel discouraged. Or we feel, oh, I'll do something else. Or oh, this doesn't work. Constancy without comparing. Without comparing how I am with how I'd like to be, with how I have been. And then when that comparison comes up, I can just pay attention to that. Just pay attention to that. Not comparing about the comparing. Just letting the comparing come in. There's plenty of room when we return to zero for all the comparing to come in, comparing and contrasting. But it's just stuff in the arteries. It's not the beating of the heart mind. The beating of the heart mind is always fresh blood, is always coming in and out. It's the blood of the veins of the universe, the veins of the plants and the trees, and the sky and the earth, and the animals and the squirrels. The blood is always pulsating. It's fresh, because heart mind is refreshing it at zero, refreshing it. And we clog the arteries up. And so that's why we do Zazen. That's why we pay attention to the dimensions and do bare awareness, bare attention. And the fourth dimension I talked about last time is openness. Openness. Through the practice of bare awareness of our body, something odd going on in our body, we just be with it. We just sensitively watch it. Whatever it is, our body, our physical contact with the world, our thoughts, our emotions, noticing the reciprocal dance between our moods and our thoughts. That's a very interesting dance. If we do that, if we practice that, then we open up to the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension is openness. Duh. Openness. Openness. We become more open. We repress more. We suppress more. We deny less. I mean, excuse me, we repress less. We suppress less. We deny less. Less, more, whatever. It's all the heart mind, right? It's all the blood flow. But as we do this, we repress less. We suppress less. We deny less. And you might want to quit sitting at that point. I know. I get that. I get that. We talk about that. We always talk about that. When these ugly parts of you come in when you're sitting, I get that. But your courage to stay with it leads to fourth dimension openness. 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 To your physical sensations, to all the gyrations mentally, to all the vagaries in your mood and how it's changing, how quickly it changes from being in the toilet and to when the sun comes out, whoa-hoo! Right? Woo-hoo! Especially in Minnesota. At this time of year. At this time of year. So, openness. Openness. And you know, we have bodhisattva precepts. We will be, a bunch of us will be initiating people into Zen formally in the fall, and people will be reciting Bodhisattva precepts. And those are precepts, those are kind of encouraging thoughts to help us open, to help us do our bare attention and open. And the one I talked about on Wednesday is, a disciple of the Buddha does not harbor ill will, but rather cultivates and encourages loving kindness and understanding. So we see when we harbor some mood, we harbor some emotion, we see that. We see how we begin to make a harbor out of it, how we begin to cut it off from the big ocean. We begin to cut the blood and the artery off from the heart itself. We see that. And then we say something to ourselves to encourage loving kindness, to cultivate loving kindness toward ourselves and other beings. And the example I gave last Wednesday night, I will give again. So I was very sick from Monday, a week ago Monday until, I don't know, just last Monday, I guess, or last Tuesday. I was sick. I mean, not very sick, but just very sick. Meaning that I didn't have to go to the hospital, but I just had to lie down the whole time. I could say that. I had to lie down the whole time except when I was eating. So I called my doctor on Thursday and asked to speak with her. Those of you who are in practice for her, tell us already. And her secretary, or I guess her administrative assistant, we don't have secretaries anymore, right? Only her administrator, this woman was no administrative assistant, she's her administrator, said to me, "Nope, can't talk to you." I said, "I'm sick." "Nope." "Well, can I go see her?" "Sure." Russell pages, July 1. "I'm sick. I'm a sick boy. I'm almost 7 years old. I'm an old boy." "Well, what about putting my name on the list for a cancellation?" "Sure," she says, "sure. But I don't trust this woman. I always have to get around this big nurse to my doctor. And she ain't even a nurse." So I just said, "Okay, good. Well, will I be called soon?" And she said, "Maybe. There are 19 people ahead of you." So I am starting to harbor ill will. I am starting to harbor ill will big time. And it doesn't matter how much zazen you do, when you're ill, you feel like you're the center of the universe and people should take care of you. Especially your doctor. So I was harboring your will. So there's a chance for me, right? Chance for me to do bare awareness, just to see it. Just to see it, and then to do the second part. Cultivate and encourage loving kindness and understanding. I can't do it about big nurse, at least I can do it about my doctor. And to say that I can't do it about big nurse, whenever we say can't, there's something fallacious in there, isn't there? What do you mean can't? She has a life too. She's that way because she has issues in her life, because she has problems in her life. We can. I can cultivate compassion toward her, toward her stress, toward what puts her in such a foul mood. I can. I can do that openly, can't I? Can't we do that openly? But it takes bare awareness to do that, for all of us. Or the harbor soon becomes polluted. It forgets that it's part of the big ocean. It becomes polluted. And we think it's not related to the ocean. And all the fish die, and all the seaweed dies, because we harbor it. We harbor our anger. We harbor our disgust, whatever it is. So when I was in college and I was a Zen student, because I did the both at the same time, believe it or not, it worked okay. It worked okay for 3 years. I wasn't always in college during that time, but because Zen practice was more important with me. So once I almost flunked out, but then I went back. Because I was sort of one-sided. But anyway, when I was in college, I majored in speech and drama, and I had a I've talked about this before, but not in a while. I had an acting teacher, Gerald Hyken, and Gerald Hyken was a he was also a practitioner of Eastern spirituality. In those days, there wasn't too much Buddhism around, except well, I did Zen, but. I think he had some kind of Indian teacher. And we get these roles to play in these little one-act plays that we'd have. I only wanted to play the good guys. I only wanted to play at least the guys who were kind of compassionate. Or they could be funny. I didn't mind playing the buffoons, but I didn't want to play bad people. And then I remember taking these classes in theater and thinking, oh, geez, here's Harold Pinter and everybody's cruel to each other and Harold Pinter. And here's Eugene O'Neill and everybody's a drunken alcoholic who abuses everybody else and Eugene O'Neill. And there's Ibsen and, oh, Chekhov is barely okay compared, Chekhov is delight in comparison with all these people. So I'm wanting... And I said, you know, to him, you know, I practice Zen every day. I do emptying out, and I don't want to play these nasty people. This doesn't help my practice. This isn't what my Zen's about. And he said to me at some point, there was nothing but nasty people to play, because if you know modern theater, Western theater, it's only about nasty people, except the comedies, right? Only about nasty. Of course, we're all nasty, aren't we? So he said to me, Tim, my teacher says, and I thought, uh-oh. He was talking about his spiritual teacher, right? He knew what I was doing. My teacher says the only way that I will ever become enlightened is when I realize how bad I am. How bad I am. So this is openness. Openness. We want to stuff it down. But we're all... I mean, these playwrights wrote this stuff based on hanging out with us, didn't they? So as much as I say, oh, modern Western theater. Oh, that's me, isn't it? That's us, isn't it? So, Basho is, as many of you know, one of my favorite Zen poets, and he talked about the poverty of letting go in this little poem, "Yield to the willow all the loathing, all the desire of your heart." So yield, ready ourselves. To move into the fifth dimension, we do this, when we yield, we open up to all of it and just let it pass through. We let it pass through and the arteries begin to get cleaned up, right? The fresh blood passing through them, that we let it pass through, unclogs them. We don't need to have any bypass. No bypass is needed. And the fifth dimension is the full emptiness dimension. Emptiness is form, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, full emptiness. And what I said about this the last two times I talked about it is that it's not knowable. It's not knowable. Period. It's not knowable. It's returning to zero. And it's about giving up our expectations, letting go of our ego supports, and just being with whatever is going on. So in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And that emptying out sometimes and moving into the fifth dimension where we don't know anything, we feel poor. We feel really poor. And that's okay. That's okay because we're so attached to all this stuff. When we empty it out, we feel poor in spirit. I've talked many times about my brother's suicide and feeling poor in spirit. When I was 40 and he was 30, and feeling poor in spirit, and bringing that to my sitting, and not wanting to be open to that guilt, to that confusion, not wanting to be open to it, wanting even to quit sitting, but coming back anyway with constancy and with as much as possible without comparing. But of course the comparisons rush in. They rush in a time like that. They rush in anyway, but especially in a time like that. And in those days, I was less lazy and infirm than I am now, and I would always walk to here in the morning and walk back and forth every morning to do my Zen sitting. And so in my walking and in my sitting, as much as possible, I just gave my pain to the lake, gave it to the earth, gave it to the sky, gave it to the trees, yielded over. Nature takes care of it if you just yield it. Nature knows how. Nature has plenty of space to take care of all of your suffering. Just yield it. Right? Right? True. True. Nature has abundant capacity to handle your suffering. Abundant capacity. And it opens you up. It opens you up. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. So on Friday night, I went to a visitation for my friend John, who died of cancer on Wednesday, I think. And his wife Jill was there at the visitation. And he's had cancer for 10 years. So Jill has been waiting for this, if waiting for this is the right word, for 10 years. And when I went into this evangelical church, which I didn't even want to go into, I'd never been in one. Well, this is my prejudice, right? This is what I carry around with me. I'd never been in one, and I thought I'd never have to go in one. But when I went in there, I just and I saw all the flowers, and I saw Jill, and I went over up and greeted her, and you know, she seemed very open, and it's almost like the suffering of all those years with him, and the heartache. That she kind of just sort of, now he was gone, and she let go. She let go. And I mean, not that she was happy. I mean, she looked soft and very sad, but open. And so gracious in her openness. And I thought, boy, she's close to zero. These evangelicals, maybe they're onto something. Maybe I should quit Zen. I didn't think that, you guys. That's a joke. But I was impressed, and I felt something. I felt how her sadness, her mourning, she'd allowed it to soften her. She'd allowed it to soften all of her expectations and all of her rigidity. She used to seem pretty rigid to me. Maybe she still is, but sometimes our experiences like this, where we're not okay, if we're just with them,
They allow us to soften. They allow us to become more open. They allow us to become more, feel more connected with others. Not always. Sometimes we harden through our suffering. That's why Zen practice is a wonderful opportunity, isn't it? Because we don't harden. We get softer and softer and softer.
So, how about ending here with a Bob Dylan? Why not? Since I'm a 60s guy, and some of you are really young, still know anyway. I mean, he's, you know, I was, you know, I remember when I heard, well, I just didn't think that people would still be interested in him. That's all I'm going to say. I didn't think when the 60s people would still be paying attention to him. So, and I've talked about this one before. My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals or violence. Silence. When you return to zero, you speak like silence. When I was with Jill at the visitation, she didn't say much. But she was so gracious. She was so open. She was so, even about John's pain, even about what it had been like the last few moments. And she said very little. But she, in her body, she spoke like silence. Now, maybe after she just went back to being her old self, well, then she needs to do Zen practice. Then she should leave that evangelical church and come over here. Right? That's how we are. We as human beings, it all comes back to us. Us. Without ideals or violence. Our ideas. The more ideas we stick to, the more violent we become. And our idea about silence, that's not silence. That has nothing to do with silence. Nothing to do with silence. It does, in that it comes with from within that silence. All ideas do. But the more we cling to our ideas, our ideals about what should happen, what we should be, how I should have behaved, how he should have behaved, how you should be sitting right now. The more we cling to that stuff, the more we're violent. We may look nice and calm in the Zendo. Oh boy, look at Tim. But the more we do that, the more violent we really are inside. So through Zen practice, through returning to zero, through opening up to all these dimensions of heart and mind, we learn to speak like silence. To speak like silence. Speak from silence. Not trying to be silent. That's not trying to be silent. It's a stillness that is here at zero. Right at zero. It's here. Right at zero. Always. It doesn't know it's zero, you know. It doesn't know it's silent. Because the fifth dimension is unknowable. We enter into it. We enter into it. So, the ending of the Sermon on the Mount. I started with the first phrase, then I did another phrase, and another ending. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. They shall see God in the bag of day-old vegetables. In the wilted spinach, in the squash that had lots of spots in it that I didn't see at first, in the flies, there were flies in the bag too. And when I first look in, the flies just looked like butterflies to me. I mean, you know, they just looked cool. Everything was alive. God, God. There's no place that God is not. Because when we return to zero, where isn't she? Where isn't he? Where isn't he? Where isn't she? You tell me. Is she not in a harbor of ill will? Sure she is. It's the same water as the water of the universe. Why would she not be there? Blessed are the pure in heart. Five dimensions of heart mind. The heart beating.
beating your heart, your own heart, not some Zen master's heart. What is that anyway? Your heart beating. Maybe you feeding your spouse some soup because he can't do anything else right now. Can't do anything else right now. There's God. Maybe you're wiping the drool from your lover's cheeks. There's God. Right? Pure in heart. Pure in heart. It's not pure in contrast to impure. No, it has nothing to do with that. It's the blood pulsating in and out of the heart. Beating, supporting the whole universe, the veins, through everything, through the walls, through the floor, through your pain. Okay, let's see. What time is it? 10:02, huh? Okay, so there's probably time for a question or a comment or whatever. Yeah.
What were the
five dimensions of heart mind? Are the physical, the mental, the emotional mood that has a reciprocal relationship with the mental, openness, and emptiness, fullness, fullness, emptiness, which is the most inscrutable one. Yeah. Why they had to do it in an inscrutable way is beyond me, but everything is beyond me. It's just the beating of the heart mind. Sure, what else? Yeah, Stacy.
A comment that I'm reminded of an organization in town called Sisters Camelot.
Uh-huh.
And the primary activity is taking an old city bus, going to the warehouse where the vegetables from the co-op, the overstock and the off-sale stuff is brought back to these warehouses to be destroyed. So on the bus, go pick up the vegetables and redistribute them to town. And I find this so awesome, and not to disparage other service styles, this is an amazing thing people do all over, but that it is all zero. The driver gets vegetables, the people carting boxes get vegetables, the people who seek out the bus to get vegetables get vegetables, the people who happen to be passing by the bus that's giving out free vegetables get free vegetables. And the vegetables are zero because they're not going to compost. They're
going to incinerate. Uh-huh. Oh, wonderful. You guys hear her? Could you hear what she, her example? Pretty good. Thank you. Anything more? Yeah.
I've heard that passage about account passage. Yeah, I think that
explains
such that, like, in the Middle East, in the mountains, the very narrow passages are called the Eye of the Needle.
Uh-huh.
If you go in order for a camel, if a camel caravan and pack animals to pass through, they have to take off all of their packages, all of their packages.
Oh, that's wonderful. That makes it a Zen. That makes it a Zen. So I guess Jesus was hanging out with Buddha. Or Buddha was hanging out with Jesus. Well, no, Jesus is later. So that's wonderful. Did you guys hear what she said? Tell them in a loud voice. In a loud voice.
In the Middle East, the mountains, the passages in the mountains are called an eye of a needle. And the camels are pack animals, and so in order for them to pass through, they have to unpack all of their packing. So the metaphor is, you know, in order for a rich man to enter heaven, they have to get rid of all of their possessions.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. And of course, the only difference is that what we need to get that in our teaching, what we need to get rid of is just all the stuff that we're clinging to in here. In here. And then we will be, we'll be more generous if we do that. It's a given that we'll be more generous. Lots of people say, well, what's the relationship between zazen and compassion? If you're not more compassionate as a result, then you're faking it. Because if you let go of all this stuff inside, all this insecurity, you're going to be more generous. You're going to not hoard. If you're not hoarding stuff in here, you're not going to hoard stuff out there. If you're still hoarding stuff out there, then you're hoarding stuff in here, honey. Right? You are. That's a wonderful example. Thank you. Yeah?
I was struck by your analogy of living in the zero. This week, Roger Ebert died.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a beautiful quote that I've just been...
Oh.
I'm going to butcher it.
Oh.
But it fits to this. He said, I was perfectly content before I was born. And I expect to be fully the same afterwards.
I saw that.
I just thought yeah.
And some,
and then zero.
Yeah. Thank you.